Australia is here. We'll stay here. We're committed to being with Papua New Guinea at this time and into the future.
Through the PNG Australia Partnership, we have a long collaboration with the government of PNG in health.
Sport is such a powerful tool at so many levels, but definitely at the community level.
Align our work to PNG's strategic frameworks and plans in the education sector.
Dispela Partnership, Emmy Strongim Sindown Naman Australia na PNG.
Hello and welcome to AHC On Air. I am Amanda Kundil. Since the late 1980s, the Australian government has been working with the government of Papua New Guinea to strengthen the law and justice sector in the country. Today, this partnership continues through the Justice Services and Stability for Development Program, or JSS4D. The program provides targeted support to PNG's law and justice agencies, provincial administrations, and civil society. The program is supporting the delivery of more effective and inclusive justice services across the country, helping improve access to justice and protection for ordinary Papua New Guineans. The current program has three pillars of support. The first is at the national level, working with law and justice agencies to develop and implement inclusive legal and policy initiatives and services, support legislative reform, and strengthen sector leadership. The second is at the sub-national level, working in six priority locations, Hela, Enga, Southern Highlands Province, Western, Moro Bay, and the Autonomous Region of Bougainville, to improve the functioning of village courts and land mediation and increase community safety and security. The third pillar provides focused support to improve accessibility, enforcement, and prosecutions in priority areas of family and sexual violence and anti-corruption. First up, we speak to Mr. Harvey Kitoria, the Provincial Coordinator, Law and Justice in Moro Bay Province. Mr. Kitoria is an active leader on law and justice in Moro Bay Province, and with his team has been at the forefront of efforts to improve the quality of accessibility of village court services in the province. Mr. Kitoria, thank you for joining us. Can you tell us what the biggest challenges are for law and justice in Moro Bay?
Firstly, the geography, and then the population. The geography is the biggest challenge with our province having about 33,000 square kilometers to cover. And then the human resource in the law and justice agencies, for instance, police, magistrate services, community-based corrections, to go out to cover that large area. And then with the estimation of the population that we have, we'll probably just clock 1 million or probably over a little bit less, but the population and the population density and land settlement in that huge geography, and then the terrain itself. So the biggest challenge is making law and justice services visible in those remote areas, and making sure that people access law and justice services. And you know, law and justice is a process. It starts from the village, and then it comes through the whole process. So from village court, then the involvement of the police, or if there's a land mediation case to ethnic violence, comes to the police, then to the courts, and then if anyone is convicted, goes to the prison, and then the rehabilitation. So managing this entire process to make it efficient and visible in the remote parts of our province, and I believe Papua New Guinea as a whole, that's the challenge. That's a challenge that we have. That's why strengthening village courts, probably I'm jumping earlier to some of your questions, but strengthening village courts, looking at how to prevention, and I was very grateful. I think what we as a province, we appreciated the direction from DJ when the focus was more on prevention in our communities. And given the challenge we have with the resources over covering a large land area, we really, I think, should focus on prevention But if to answer your question, what is the biggest challenge? It's making law and justice services visible and effective in the rural communities.
Yeah.
And that's the challenge. Yeah.
We work a lot with village courts and community organizations to improve safety and security. So how important is local engagement to address law and justice issues?
It's crucial, actually. It's very important. It's local engagement is very important in what we do. A lot of us, you know, moreover, we've got 96 cultural languages and cultural ethnicity. It's something that it's prevalent in our rural communities. Going into a rural community, and yes, we went to Boisiasi, we also went to Menyanya, we also went to Cabo. These are three of the most remotest and challenging justice, you know, considerations. It's challenging. So we went to those three to engage local people, and local engagement going forward is critical. Understanding most of what people's cultural, ethnic, you know, cultural orientation, what guides and what sort of regulates the way they think and do things, it's very important for us. Going in with what we want to emphasize on orderliness, on provision of law and justice services is one thing, but making sure that we harmonize within the cultural context is also critical. And that's where local engagement plays a pivotal role in bridging that objective. Right. So we want to go in with what we want to deliver law and justice. We want to talk about advocacy on family sexual violence. We want to strengthen village court systems. At the same time, we want to respect the way people think and act and behave, and we don't sort of cross each other path and create differences by enforcing things that we're not. So local engagement is critical in that, understanding the local context, and it varies across the entire province.
What changes have you seen in the way village courts operate and the way communities regard village courts?
The two things. On village court particularly, I'd like to acknowledge the Markham district. I think they bought uniforms, they bought bicycles, they bought umbrellas and things like that. And it added to the motivation for the village court officers. What is that I've seen in the way village courts operate? Communication has improved. When our officers go out there for village court inspections, for the data collection, one of the things that I've seen is the information coming in, and that has been positive. The information that came in has been positive, and so that's an achievement. I think there's more. Communication. There's more communication between the districts and us through that the strengthening of village court course. So that's something that we really, given the, like I said, magnitude, the extent of how big our province is, having communication with important district officials and village court officials at certain areas. It helps to monitor our work. It helps with our communication as well. So, what changes that I've seen? I think information coming in our database, but that still needs a big work to be done there. There's so much information we really need to capture, and we're going pretty slowly. That's one area we'd like to improve: speeding up our data collection and ensuring that focus things based on data, on facts.
Yeah.
Focus our efforts, focus our priorities, our activities to address issues based on statistics. And that is coming in slowly, but on the other hand, we have done something about it. We've achieved something. So communication and information exchanges is something that I've seen that I'd say it's an achievement.
How has the assistance from the PNG Australia Partnership helped you in your work?
Huge. PNG Australia Partnership has really helped our program. And that assistance, well, it also assisted us in the governance, how we operate and how we implement our programs at the district level, at the sub-provincial level. The way GSS4DN also operated, it's a learning to us to show us how we can improve our governance processes. So that's something that we've helped by being involved in that partnership that we've picked up. But generally, the funding support, the guidance, and then helping with information to see how best we can really go through and implement programs at the district level, that's critical.
Yeah.
And so the Australian government support is really valued in many ways. So it has really helped.
Thank you, Mr. Kitoria. We now take a short break, and when we return, we'll speak to the Morobe Family and Sexual Violence Action Committee Coordinator, Thelma Hangito.
National elections is a time to elect new representatives into parliament, and everyone, regardless of gender, color, social status, disability, or religion, are entitled as a citizen of Papua New Guinea to participate freely in the campaign and polling period. We all have a responsibility to make the 2022 national election a truly free, fair, and safe election. We can each do this by modeling respectful and caring conduct by putting the needs of those in our communities who are most at risk of violence first and ahead of our own. Stand up, speak up, and take action against any form of violence committed against women, children, and people with disabilities in your community.
Remember, you might be the only help they have. Call the One Talk Counseling Helping Line on 7150-8000 for help and referrals on gender-based violence cases.
A message from CIMC's Family and Sexual Violence Action Committee, supported by PNG Oz Partnership.
Welcome back to this edition of AHC On Air on our Law and Justice program. For almost 10 years, Thelma Hangito has been at the center of efforts in Morobe to tackle issues around gender-based violence and improving support and opportunities for the most vulnerable, including persons with disabilities. One of her proudest achievements was overseeing the decentralization of FSV services within the province. She is also heavily involved in improving support and services in Pulolo for people living with disability and their careers. Thank you for joining us, Ms. Hangito. You have been the coordinator of the Morobe Family and Sexual Violence Action Committee since it was founded in 2016. What motivated you to get involved in this area of work?
It was all being very involved in this work was true passion, and because we study social work in back at the university, it's good to implement exercise, fully implement the knowledge that we gain from the school. Mm. So it was more of the passion of serving humanity.
Mm.
That's why it took me the whole time to be concentrated on the work itself. Mm. Yeah.
Studies suggest many women in PNG experience some form of family and sexual violence. From your experience, how prevalent is it in Morobe?
So, family and sexual violence in the districts, in the province, is seen as a norm. Before we started doing awareness and stuff, everyone see FSV as a norm. It's normal to beat your husband, beat your wife, beat your children. It's normal to do argument and do aggressive things at home. But No one usually comes out and reports. Only the bravest people come out and report that they are facing this issue in their homes.
Mm.
But after the continued ongoing awareness that we've done through the past years, we've seen a lot of change with the reporting part of it.
Mm.
So we've seen lots of women coming out and report.
Mm.
Lots of women want to get IPO. Lots of women want to get their husband arrested. Lots of women want maintenance, for the husband to pay the child's maintenance. And so that's the power of awareness, information sharing through the province and the district itself. So the widespread of the prevalence of GBV in the province, like I said, it's no exceptional to other provinces. It's just very high. When we started doing awareness, more people come out and do reports rather than the pastors. Like I said, the bravest people comes out to report.
That's right.
Now, you know, because people are seeing it as a norm in their homes.
Do you also see cases of sorcery accusation-related violence?
I do coordination with all the other service providers. And sharp cases, social accusation-related violence, at one of the cases that it comes through our referral pathway. So let's say I am notified that we have cases of seven. Yes, we cannot deny we've seen a number of cases coming through our referral pathway.
How are you and the FSDAC going about addressing this issue? What are your priorities? What sort of things do you do?
What my office, we my office, the activities we're planning,
yeah,
and we've been doing is we're doing decentralization into the districts and into the LLGs. So this decentralization in terms of we already have a national GV secretary. They are working on it, the provincial secretariat. So we want to have, we call them FSV or GBV focal points. We're going to set up district FSVAC. So at least we have people, we train them to know the know-how to approach survivors, where to send them to, whom to see, what services is available in the district that they can use instead of coming all the way to town. Because the expense of coming to town and then staying in town and the processes of court, the delays, it affects also their staying in town. So our priority area is to decentralize into the districts and into the LLGs and wards. So there are services in the districts and wards. We cannot deny that. But we just need to train them, to equip them with knowledge, to know how to do things, to know how to help a survivor, writing their statements, simple things like writing their statements and refer them to a particular service provider that can help them.
How has the PNG Australia partnership through JSS4D contributed to improvement of FSV services?
Before I said anything on that, like, let me acknowledge the PNG Australian partnership for that through the Office of Justice Services and Stability for Development, JSS4D.
Yes.
Because it has, like, contributed a lot in our work, actually. JSS4D concentrates on law and order issues with Village Court and all the other law and order agencies. But also, through Mr. Harold's office, Mr. Don Harold, advisor in Lay, he sees the importance of upholding FSV also, because it's one of other law and order issue also. It's a crime. So that's where the support came in, and it started supporting us, and now we are delivering into the district and improving our referral pathway, and we are also improving the referral pathway in the districts also and in the LLG level. So JSS4D supported us tremendously, I should say.
Are these services also accessible by PWDs or persons living with disabilities?
Yes. We have, like, the network that we have during our meetings and our quarterly meetings and stuff, we encourage ourselves. These are people, persons with disability, the MAPS, the most at risk people. These are people who have the same rights, equal rights as we are. If they are facing violence and if they approach your office, see them as a client, a survivor. Before we started the secretariat of this, this is what, you know, we promote human rights in our work tools too. So when we are serving a survivor, we approach them with the concerns of them having the same rights as us. So it's a human rights type of approach that we approach them. Yes, holistically.
That was Tama Hangitso, Moribes FSVAC coordinator, speaking on dealing with FSVAC in the province and decentralizing FSV services from the provincial level to the district level. She also touched on PWD's accessing FSV services. We'll go for another short break, and joining us on the other side is Disability Sector Coalition Chairman, Mr. Ben Theodore.
Hi, my name is Loadi Katoa. I do weightlifting as the sport. It takes me around the world and it has given me a name. Once the pandemic hit, our institute had to shut down and we all had to return back home. The training wasn't the same. We have family obligations in a village set up as such. I had to get my vaccination because I didn't want to die. I had to get that in order to continue what I do and to protect my family. I know and I believe that I have been protected. My advice to everyone is always wear masks, and COVID-19 and Delta is around. COVID-19 and Bikla heavy. Kisim vaccine na Bayumi strong.
Thank you for staying with us on AHC On Air on our Law and Justice program. Ben was visually impaired while serving as a police officer during the Bougainville conflict, and he is a strong advocate for the rights and interests of people with disabilities and at the law and justice sector's Gender Equality and Diversity Social Inclusion Community of Practice, or GEDSI for short. Joining with me now is Mr. Ben Theodore, Chairman for Disability Sector Coalition. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Amanda, and thank you for the invitation.
What are the challenges or barriers persons living with disabilities face in accessing law and justice services?
To understand it properly, let's put it this way. Equal access to justice for persons with disabilities is very hard to come by. Mm. There are several reasons, and there are many reasons for it. Plenty of it you can talk about institutions, policies. Mm. Plenty of it you can talk about all those practical things. But let me start by highlighting the four main barriers. The four main barriers that as a developing nation, this country, after ratifying the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities back in 2013, the four main barriers that is highlighted in the convention remains for us as a country, Papua New Guinea, with an obligation to promote and protect the rights of persons with disabilities under this convention. So that's the best approach that this country have done. It has ratified the convention. Then those four big barriers are: one, attitude. Number two, environment and infrastructure. Number three, information communication. Number four, institutions. That covers policy, legislation, and all this. So you have those four main barriers. So then, what is disability? So disability is not about the body impairment. Disability is about the barrier. And the four main barriers that defines the term disability are the attitude, that is a disability, attitude, barrier, the infrastructure and environment, the communication information, information communication, that is a barrier. And of course, without policies, legislation, it's a huge barrier. So putting all of this together, you can see the challenge that people with disability face. And are marginalized. Simply, to answer your question, is that the issue is that our country, while it has policies in place, it has not fully removed the barriers, and because there are attitudes still in place.
You are a member of the Law and Justice Sector Gender Equality, Disability and Social Inclusion Community of Practice. What does it do, and how is it making a difference for people with a disability?
Thank you, Amanda. Well, I think my association with the COP is through the organization that I chair, and interim chair of, which is the PNC Disability Sector Coalition, which is Pillar 2 in the National Policy on Disability, and we are about service provision, guided by the community-based rehabilitation guidelines.
Yes.
And the likes of CLAN, right? CLAN services, those are service providers. They are providing direct services to persons with disabilities. So we come together in meetings, and I also represent sports, and sports for persons with disabilities, the Special Olympics and Paralympics and all that. So I sit in there, and I currently the interim chair. So through that service, we provide service. We kind of, we have people who know how to provide service, how to cater for people with disability. We have teachers who are inclusive teachers. We have, you know, all sorts of rehabilitation officers for different purposes, or different ways of rehabilitating people. So these service providers, we come together. I actually embrace the partnership, right, the collaborations, because in the services that we provide, we promote, under the policy, we promote mainstreaming of disability, right?
Yes.
So I saw this, that this is it. This is it. This is where government, we will be within the government ranks, and we will shape conversations within the government ranks to determine those inclusive outcomes.
The PNG Australia Partnership supports the GEDC COP and has made disability inclusion a priority. What impact is the partnership's support having?
Oh, thank you. I think the Australian government, through the Disability Inclusive Development Policy, and of course putting on versus 40 to support disability through Jesse Cope, we've been invited to sit and shape conversations. We have now put a D between the Jesse to become Jesse. So
that's yes.
Right in the middle, it's focused. So that is focused. And that is to different, or that is to different people support. Huh?
Yes.
Disability is being focused on. We have just started our real follow through on with policies. And I'm sure all these policies, how have come through, and that this is the support that the Australian government is giving to PNG through the Law and Justice sector. And there is no other sector than this sector that you know, upholds the law, that promotes the human rights, really enforces the human rights of people. Huh? And if something that the Australian government can be happy about, it is because the Law and Justice sector is now being sensitized, heavily sensitized on disability issues and equal access to justice. So progress has started. It is now progressing. Gradually, it will come to a stage where, you know, our courthouse, our police officers, our lawyers, they will know how to appropriately interact with persons with the different classes of disability.
And that was Mr. Ben Theodore, Disability Sector Coalition Chairman. Well, listeners, this brings us to the end of this month's edition of AHC On Air on Village Courts, Family and Sexual Violence and Disability Inclusion. For those of you who are facing family and sexual violence or know someone who is, you can call this free One Talk Counseling Helping Line number 71508000 to get support and speak with trained counselors. Do join us next month for another episode of AHC On Air. Until then, I am Amanda Kundil, and it's bye for now.
Australia is here. We'll stay here. We're committed to being with Papua New Guinea at this time and into the future.
Through the PNG Australia Partnership, We have a long collaboration with the government of PNG in health.
Sport is such a powerful tool at so many levels, but definitely at the community level.
Align our work to PNG's strategic frameworks and plans in the education sector.
Dispala partnership, Emmy Strongim Sindown, Naman Australia and PNG.
NBC TV and radio, you get the best of both worlds. Advertising is not only made easier.
1+1, 2.
But affordable.
Thank you.
And with a reach like ours.
Oops. Sorry, excuse me.
It's a no-brainer. We're your one-stop shop in advertising. Whatever your target audience, we can tailor to suit your budget and help create a greater impact on your audience. Why go anywhere else? Call 325-1870. Your real PNG affordable advertising alternative.